Welcome to the Public Lands Podcast. It's 2020, which they tell me is not technically a new decade, but we're nevertheless looking forward to a new start for the podcast, and hopefully for our public lands, water, and air. I'm your host today and the executive producer of the podcast, Mark Pedalty. I'd like to give a warm welcome to Hadley Nellis, who will be signing on as associate producer of the Public Lands Podcast, and who will be hearing from extensively starting Friday, February 7th, as she brings us 3 weeks of special reports leading into reports by a range of guest podcasters in subsequent weeks. Meanwhile, I'll post three podcasts to get the year underway, starting with today's podcast concerning controversies at the United States Bureau of Land Management. The report today features an interview with Shelley Silbert, who is the executive director of Great Old Broads for Wilderness, one of the signatory groups calling for the resignation of William Perry Pendley as director of the BLM. Out of the 91 groups listed on the letter, my eye was drawn to the Great Old Broads for Wilderness, and I'm glad, because Ms. Silbert was an absolutely fascinating interview. Before we get to that report on the BLM, a quick reset to get things started for the year. This year we're going to expand in scope and scale. In about 6 weeks, we'll start featuring guest reports. This will allow us to add more voices to the podcast and expand our voice print as guest reporters interview public land stewards, scientists, artists, policymakers, musicians, activists, and others from all over the United States, North America, and occasionally reaching out to other parts of the world for comparison and context when it comes to how public lands are stewarded, managed, and experienced. We seek to create a more national, continental, and global exchange of ideas and information, having seen how useful the podcast has been at the local and state levels. That odd cooing and thumping is made by a male sage grouse. It's making its brilliant spring courtship display. In fewer places throughout the West, you can see that incredible dance and hear such grousing reverberate across the prairie. The few protections given the sage grouse in the past are being taken away while increased grazing, mining, drilling, and sales of federal land further reduce the sage grouse's habitat. But this story is not about the preservation of any single animal, but rather what is happening to land on which wildlife reside throughout America. In this case, the Bureau of Land Management, or BLM lands, that make up 10% of all land in the United States. No less than 245 million acres. However, it will soon be less. Far less. If the newly nominated director, William Perry Pendley, has his way. As has been true for their public land management policies more generally, the Trump administration's actions in regard to the Bureau of Land Management have inflamed a number of controversies around the West, as well as in Washington, D.C. That policy has been nothing, if not incredibly consistent. The policy has been to downsize and privatize our public lands and governmental oversight of private interests and polluters. The radical reduction in size of Bears Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument land area is just one of many such stories reported on the podcast in recent years, joined by plans to privatize much more of the management of our national parks, reversing decades of successful environmental legislation, including the Clean Water Act. And consistent with that policy has been a tendency to name officials to leadership positions that have been openly antagonistic to the actions and very existence of the organizations that they have been assigned to lead. That is the case with Donald Trump's nomination of William Perry Pendley to direct the Bureau of Land Management. Pendley has spent much of his career calling for the dismantling of the BLM and privatization of all BLM lands and, in fact, all federally owned. He is a libertarian firebrand who refers to the climate science community's consensus on climate change, that is, that climate change is happening and that is caused by humans. He refers to that as junk science. His nomination, still without congressional support, led advocates and stewards of public lands throughout the country toward vociferous opposition, including a letter of protest signed by 91 of the most prominent environmental organizations. Using a similar shotgun approach to governance as his boss and benefactor, President Trump, Penley has begun creating more holes in the proverbial dike than his overworked public opposition can plug, including to allow fracking on BLM lands in California, a move clearly designed to pique the anger and attention of the liberal leadership in that state. Libertarian activists that have taken over public BLM lands, sometimes at gunpoint, have been emboldened by these shifts in federal policy. Given this flurry of activities, it's hard to know where to start in explaining the BLM controversy. Perhaps none is more telling than Penley's decision to relocate the BLM headquarters from Washington, D.C., the center of federal governance, to Grand Junction, Colorado. Before hearing why environmental organizations are opposed to that seemingly innocuous change in scenery for the Bureau, it is perhaps best to hear about it from the source, William Perry Penley himself. The BLM filmed and distributed the following video to explain why the move is financially and logistically advantageous.
Howdy, I'm William Perry Penley, Deputy Director of the Bureau of Land Management. About this time of year around these parts, there's a song they sing. It goes, "It's Christmas Eve in Washington, America's hometown." Except for me, it's not. I was born and raised in Cheyenne, and my wife and I have lived in Evergreen, Colorado for decades. I'm excited this year about returning home to join my wife, our two sons, daughter, five grandkids, and celebrating Christmas. This year, however, I'm bringing well-paying BLM jobs with me. Secretary David Bernhardt and I believe the Bureau of Land Management talented workforce belongs in the West, not Washington, D.C. That's why we're moving the headquarters to Grand Junction, Colorado, and sending 300 high-level positions to state offices in Billings, Boise, Reno, Cheyenne, Santa Fe, and elsewhere. It's a no-brainer, but some in Congress wonder why. Well, here's why. First, it's where our work is. 99.99% of the 245 million acres of federal lands managed by the BLM, 10% of the country, is in the 11 western states and Alaska. 97% of our employees are already there. But 50 and 60% of our most senior, seasoned executive decision makers are right here in Washington, D.C. We want them closer to the lands they manage and the people they work with, rather than two and even four time zones away in Washington. Second, it's better for our employees. Washington is notorious for political nonsense, bad traffic, and a very high cost of living. Out west, our senior BLM officials will enjoy a much lower cost of living, a much shorter commuting time, and proximity to the recreational pursuits and public lands in the west wide open spaces. Finally, we have bipartisan support. Despite protests from some members of Congress, mostly from the East Coast, where BLM properties are few and far between, the move has gained bipartisan support from federal, state, and local officials throughout the West. We're going to make it happen early next year. So stop by and say howdy to your new neighbors, your new BLM neighbors at the Grand Junction headquarters, where I'll be on January the 2nd, and our other Western locations. Until then, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and Happy New Year.
Those arguments seem to make a lot of sense. After all, why shouldn't the West BLM lands be managed in the West? And if it saves money to boot, isn't that a good thing? The Society for Cost-Benefit Analysis notes that the assertion of money savings does not appear to be based on a rigorous assessment of the BLM, and in fact was justified by the BLM in a two-page document lacking in any kind of financial or logistical specifics. That led the House Natural Resources Committee last week to demand that the Interior Department supply a full cost-benefits analysis for the relocation. Opponents argue that the relocation is really about downsizing, step one in Penley and Trump's plan to eventually eliminate the BLM. It also fits their states' rights arguments that localities and not the federal government should decide the fate of the nation's public lands and waterways. They have long been bothered that habitat and preservation could in any way impede private development. Here, for example, is an interview with Penley in 2013 where he foreshadows the fight to come over the Endangered Species Act, which he views as an impediment to progress, which he refers to specifically in the interview as drilling and mining.
Well, Ronald Reagan called environmentalists, he called them environmental extremists or modern-day Luddites, because he recognized they were a throwback to an earlier time when they wanted to stop progress. Frankly, environmental groups do not believe in the needs of human beings. They think that human faith in technology is misplaced, and they think government has all the answers. And so they want to put government in control. And one of the ways to do that is through the Endangered Species Act. So we represent Westerners all across the country and fighting against attempts to put the Endangered Species Act in place to stop activity, like stop oil and gas activity or stop ranching or stop mining or prevent people from using their private property.
That was William Perry Penley, and he was speaking at the Steamboat Institute Freedom Conference, and he was interviewed in 2013. Having heard from and about William Perry Penley and his plans for the BLM and our public lands, let's now turn to a very different perspective. Shelley Silbert is the executive director of the Great Broads for Wilderness. It was the BLM protest letter that brought me to Shelley. But as you'll hear, she had a lot more to tell us about the origins of her group, their work, and why it is that they are opposed to William Perry Penley's nomination for director of the BLM. She'll also tell us a little bit about what they're doing about it. As promised, we're here with Shelley Silbert, executive director of Great Old Broads for Wilderness, and they're based in Durango, Colorado. Shelley, to get started, how did the Great Old Broads for Wilderness come about?
Well, it's a great story, and we have been around now for 30 years, which seems like just a youngster to a great old broad, but it's actually pretty significant for our organization to have been around for three decades. We started in southern Utah when a group of five older women were out hiking in what is now the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument, and they became aware when they came back from their hike that one of our illustrious senators from Utah had made a comment that wilderness was of no value to the elderly and the disabled because he said they couldn't access it. And here were five women who were all over 50 in their 60s, 70s out hiking. And they said, you know, whether we can access this someday or not, we want to know that it will be forever protected. These lands matter to us. They matter to all Americans. And we want to be that voice that says that wilderness and our public lands are very significant. So they decided to counter that comment, which was made at the time of the 25th anniversary of the Wilderness Act, and formed an organization. So they wanted to represent the voice of older Americans who felt wilderness was important. They then thought about it a bit and said, you know, we want something that's a bit attention-getting, something that's going to make you think twice when you hear the name. And they were trying to come up with what that name would be that would represent their age, that would represent that they were women, and that they were passionate about wilderness. And the story goes that they were sitting in a cafe after their hike, all dusty and dirty, and one of them stood up to go to the bathroom and walked off, and someone at a table nearby said, "There goes a great old broad." And they thought, that's it, Great Old Broads for Wilderness. And the name stuck, and it's unusual, but it definitely creates a stir when you hear it, and you keep it in your mind.
Oh, that's great. It's definitely captures the attention more than some of the staid sort of more bureaucratic names of nonprofits. Really appreciate that you've done that. And so tell us a little bit about the work the organization does. And just before I mention that, it's kind of exciting that your genesis was at Grand Staircase Escalante, because that in Bear's Ears really has been the ground zero for some of the privatization fight and what's been going on with the Trump administration. So tell us a little bit about what sort of work your organization does, and maybe connect it on back to that moment that you came about.
Well, that's exactly right, Mark. The organization really started with a focus on southern Utah because there always had been so much effort or focus on trying to reduce the control of or the ability of the federal government to make decisions about how Americans' public lands are managed. Our public lands belong to all Americans, not just to the people who live nearby. And the idea was that public lands need to be protected and need to be the decisions about them need to be made at the national level, because the interests may be a little more global, I might say, or a little more thinking about what their long-term use is. But specifically, you asked what we do. We are a national grassroots organization that focuses on public lands and their protection. And in particular, we look at wilderness and wild areas, or lands that are relatively undisturbed. We are an organization that really believes women's leadership is essential, and that we as women are rising up to protect our mother, to protect the earth. And we train women to be leaders in starting their own grassroots chapters across the country, where the women in their chapter can get out on their public lands, learn about the complexity of issues, become involved in stewardship projects to restore and improve the public lands, and be involved with advocacy and education to ensure that public lands are being managed in ways that are going to enhance their value and protect what they bring to all Americans and to all species. We are very much in favor of protecting wildlife habitat and restoring wildlife as well.
It's such important work, and as somebody who's at a land-grant university, we sure appreciate the work you're doing there. You told us this great organizational story about the group of women that formed the organization and what they've done. What about your personal story? We're always interested to hear how somebody gets involved in this kind of work. How do you become the executive director of a national organization like this? What sort of things brought you to this point?
Well, I have to say that for me, my passion for public lands really developed as I began backpacking in my late teens and early 20s, and just absolutely fell in love with wilderness and with how I felt in the wilderness, which is essentially recognizing how tiny I am in this, you know, enormous world, and that my place in it was important, but, you know, somehow being under the stars and by raging rivers and out in forests made me feel that I both had a very important role to play, but also that I was just a little piece of this wondrous world that we are part of. So that's how I fell in love with wilderness. And I ended up studying in my graduate degree, studying natural resource management. I went on to work for the Nature Conservancy for about a decade, and then on to Northern Arizona University, working in the sustainability field, but always wanted to do more to advocate for wild places. I happened to hear about Great Old Broads for Wilderness because they have a wonderful auction each year as a fundraiser. We have, I should say now. But at the time, I'd never heard of the organization. And then someone mentioned that, you know, this auction was going on, and they got tickets to go skiing at Wolf Creek Pass in Colorado. And I said, how did you get that? They said, it's an organization called Great Old Broads for Wilderness. And I said, what? There's really an organization by that name? What does it do? I couldn't even imagine. But when I heard about it, I thought it just sounded wonderful. And it was a few years later that I learned about their search for an executive director. And I thought, what could be more perfect for me than working to protect wilderness and working with other women who were passionate about public lands?
Yeah, it must have been quite a discovery. I first discovered the Great Old Broads for Wilderness on a coalition letter asking for the resignation of William Perry Penley, the Deputy Director, Bureau of Land Management. Can you tell us why you and that coalition of 91 organizations would like Perry to step down? And as I mentioned, as I looked down that list of signatories to that, Great Old Broads really jumped out. So what is it about William Perry Penley and the Bureau of Land Management that was problematic for your organization?
Well, it's really hard to imagine a more inappropriate person to be managing our public lands. He is someone who has been openly hostile to America's public lands. He has talked about their sale, privatizing them. He is not in favor of following existing federal laws to ensure public input in how we manage our public lands. He his whole career has been built around extracting every possible resource from our public lands with little to no concern about the impacts on wildlife habitat, on recreation, and on the importance of our public lands in protecting our water resources, our climate, our air. So I just, you know, when I look at him, it's not just a fox guarding the chicken house. It's it's more like having a known child molester babysitting your kids. I mean, he's just so anathema to public lands. He is really actively working and has been for years in his role with the Mountain States Legal Foundation, been actively working to dismantle the agencies that protect public lands. And he's been actively working to ensure that the laws are weakened or eliminated. And I think with the move of the BLM to Grand Junction in Colorado, you would think, well, isn't that exciting, moving to the state where I live? But no, I mean, it's really another part of dismantling the agency, because it's distancing that agency from the place where, you know, many of the legal decisions are made, where Congress is, where the connections are made with our federal government, and putting the agency closer to where the extractive industries have a much larger voice. So that's another thing that is of great concern to me.
Well, that makes sense. It seems like there's a parallel in the Department of Agriculture moving to Kansas. You know,
And you're losing, I just wanted to mention, you're losing so many people who spent years and years working in the agencies and who have just an incredible amount of institutional knowledge. And they gave them four months to make a decision to move. And, you know, these are people who have bought homes and whose kids are in school and who, you know, have built their careers around working in another location. But you have to recognize that most of the BLM employees are located out in the rural communities and small towns across the West, where most of the public lands, the BLM lands, are found. It's only a small number of people who work in D.C., but they're playing a very important role within the agency. So I really think that is an effort to just to, again, decrease the ability for the agency to carry out its mission and its functions.
Absolutely. And it does seem that this might be my own bias, but it seems that that privatization of the public lands and that whole move to sort of really kind of raid the public and natural capital has gone a little bit under the radar in terms of the national headlines compared to some more sensationalistic kind of tweets, et cetera, that take place. And it's been, I think, a little frustrating for many people as far as getting national attention to really what is quite an impressive land grab. So I think it's great that your organization and the other 91 signatories to that letter are trying to do something about that. I have a couple more questions. I don't want to keep you too long, but I just wonder, have you seen any promising sort of practical effects of that effort so far?
Well, it certainly brought more attention to who William Perry Penley is. And I think that it's gotten attention in Congress as well. So we will see. I mean, he continues to be appointed temporarily to this post, which is another way of reducing the ability to have influence over him. He's not an approved director at this point. And so if he just continues to be temporarily appointed, it really reduces the ability of Congress and of others to have any influence or any ability to really play a role in what happens on our public lands. I just want to mention one thing more about him, and that is that he represented a number of counties in Utah, San Juan, Kane, Garfield counties, perhaps more, in legal intervention regarding the Bears Ears National Monument and the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument after the reduction of those monuments by the Trump administration by executive order. So he was actually, you know, it's a real conflict of interest when he is representing the counties that were at that time favoring the reduction of the monuments. And now he's ending up being in charge, at least temporarily, but for a long time, over the BLM. So we are plaintiffs in the lawsuit against the Trump administration about Bears Ears, saying that the president does not have the authority to reduce the size of a monument that has already been established under the Antiquities Act. I just want to make that clear that we are plaintiffs in this lawsuit. So we definitely don't want to see someone heading the BLM who represented counties in Utah that that supported the reduction of those monuments. And I might say that San Juan County has since reversed its decision and is now supporting the monument.
Oh, that's interesting. That's great news to hear.
The commissioners there have actually, they're new elected commissioners and have made that decision.
Well, that's exciting. So, I mean, when you speak of names again, this is somewhat switching gears, but it sounds like William Perry Penley is somewhat of a temporary unapproved dismantler as opposed to whatever else he might be considered as far as the person that would steward that agency. And speaking of names, then I just was, one of the things I was drawn to the name of your group and the work you've been doing is it was extreme privilege of mine to interview and write a book chapter about a group called the Raging Grannies in Victoria, BC, which for a while they had a global effect. They had chapters throughout Canada, the United States, several parts in Europe, Middle East. And I think they've waned somewhat as far as from their nadir when they were a much stronger group. But I know that Great Old Broads is a very different group with a more focused mission, but I can't help but notice a rhetorical parallel in your organizational names. Are you or were the people that formed Great Old Broads aware of Raging Grannies? And if so, did that movement have any influence on yours? Or are there any parallels to be drawn there beyond the group name?
You know, I can't say if the founders were familiar with Raging Grannies, but I bet they were. And I can say for myself, I've always admired the work of the Raging Grannies, and I love their name. I think that it is very parallel in, you know, expressing that they are activists, they are involved, they're knowledgeable, and they're, you know, willing to take a stand on difficult issues, and that is true for us as well. My understanding is that they formed in Canada, and of course we formed in the United States, and we do have a more specific focus. I believe they're more focused on social justice in general, which I really appreciate. We have a particular focus on America's public lands and on America's wilderness. So while there are a lot of parallels, and I would bet you that we have, you know, folks who are members of both and you know, our members appreciate so much of what they do. We do have our own unique personality. And part of that is that we get out on public lands. We experience them through national events called broadwalks and broadworks, where we're going and learning about a particular public lands area and learning what we can do to protect it, or in some cases actually doing stewardship projects on public lands. Those would be the broadworks. And we like to get out on public lands and get to know them, and therefore have a great deal of knowledge about what to advocate for. So education is first step, and then advocacy. I think that, you know, like Raging Grannies, we have a lot of older women. We welcome women of all ages as well as men in our membership and in our activities. But like Raging Grannies, we like to get out and, you know, get into costumes and make a stir. And I mean, just as an example, at the time when the Malheur takeover happened in Oregon, it was our group that started a series of protests against the Bundy family takeover and their allies to basically take our public lands hostage, and dressed as our women, our chapters there, dressed as grannies and aprons with their rolling pins and, you know, signs that said, you know, we like birds, not bullies, and let's make bully turnovers, and here's a recipe. And they got out there and, you know, spoke up against these people who felt that they had a right to occupy a bird sanctuary, and, you know, to basically go in and say that, you know, we have this right to be here. So we were unafraid. We were willing to step up. And I think in that sense, that would be very parallel to the Raging Grannies.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned knowledge a couple times, not only the scientific knowledge that's so apparent there and the stewardship knowledge, but the generational knowledge that I think is represented in such a group, in your group, and the willingness to pair that with creative communication, not to just divorce that side of things from it and make it, you know, deadly serious, I think is a really important lesson, I think, for the rest of the environmental movement, for policymakers, et cetera.
Well, as you can tell from our name, we like to have fun, and humor is a big part of what we do, and it's what keeps people coming back. And that camaraderie that's formed, especially in our grassroots chapters, but across the whole organization, is a real strength of who we are and the effectiveness of what we do.
Oh, that's such an important point. In order to mobilize a community, it can't just be sort of data and figures. It has to be something that enthuses people, gets them excited about taking part in the human work. So what's next? What are you working on now? What's next for the Great Old Broads for Wilderness?
Well, we have a lot going on across our 40 chapters, and we're located from Alaska to Maine, from California to Georgia. So we have chapters in 17 states and always are looking to form new chapters. So one of the important things that's coming up next is we have our Wilderness Advocacy Leadership Training Session, which we call WALTS, which is the training session for anyone who wants to become a broadband leader. That's what we call our chapters, broadbands or bands of broads. So our broadbands are led by women that step up and make a two-year commitment, go through our training, which is free once you get to the location. This year it's going to be held in New Hampshire. And we train them in grassroots organizing, in the basics of public lands and public land policies, and basically how to form their chapters, step up to do education, advocacy, and stewardship. So that's coming up at the end of April. Then we have a number of events coming up this year as well. We have our 5-day broad walks where you have the opportunity to get out onto specific public lands. And this year we're going to be focusing on the impact of climate change on our public lands and how our public lands also can play an important role in mitigating climate change. So we're doing one event called, I think, May the Forest Be With You. Actually, I may not have that name exactly right, but it's focused on forests and climate change on public lands in Squim, Washington. Mm. That's coming up in August. And in the beginning of June in Maine, we have an event that's focused on coasts and climates. So both of those events are open to all members, and we have a number of other events coming up in May and October, a San Juan River trip with bear Buenos Aires advocate, Regina Lopez White Skunk, and a watercolor artist who's going to be doing a workshop with us on doing watercolors outdoors, and as well as a writing workshop with Pam Houston coming up in Colorado in early October. So lots of events, as well as many, many events across the country with our grassroots chapters working on everything from challenging some of the Trump administration efforts to get rid of the National Environmental Policy Act, which is so critical for public lands management, working on issues of off-highway vehicles or planting willows, restoring riparian areas, doing education about particular threats to public lands, everything from, inappropriate resource management plans at the BLM level to supporting efforts for restoration and protection of wildlife or restoration of wolves in Colorado. So a whole host of issues across our 40 chapters. Lots going on.
Wow, it sounds like it. Really important initiatives and exciting events. We're going to be in the San Juan Islands near Squim in August, as we always are. So hopefully we'll be able to check out that event in Squim in August. So,
that's wonderful.
Yeah.
We'd love that.
Well, thank you so much, Shelley. You've been very kind to give us your time, and I'm sure the listeners were very excited to hear about your work, and hopefully we'll be able to join in around the country. And best of luck to you in the coming months and doing the important work you're doing on all our behalf.
Well, thank you so much, Mark. It's a pleasure. And if you want to learn more about Great Old Broads, you can go to our website at www.greatoldbroads.org.
Great.
Really appreciate talking with you.
Great. I think it's always supposed to be said twice, so that was www.greatoldbroads.org?
Yes.
Great. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Shelley.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. Please join us again next week. Until then, may you get out to enjoy, steward, and protect a park, river, lake, or refuge near you.